Cruising down the street, I wonder where this road would lead. So many possibilities. Care to share what you think? Oh, noodles, what do you see? Back Road Odyssey.
The Donner Party. One Wrong Turn. Part 2. Death was the rule. Life, the exception. Life was at best a transitory dream, set in a universe that was entirely indifferent to his fate. Daniel James Brown, The Indifferent Stars Above. The harrowing saga of the Donner Party. Cold settles within bones. Continuous snowfall marks the steady passage towards winter. The Donner Party gaze upon a path whose crossing grows less and less likely with each passing day. For the now 80 settlers, death by cold or slow, relentless starvation is very much a looming reality. We are as near heaven as we could get, an unknown member of the Donner Party. The pass ahead stands at some 7,000 feet before extending towards the Sacramento Valley. Its east slope is difficult to traverse, even in favorable conditions. Less than 3 miles from the summit, two frightening options become apparent to the Donner Party. Abandon your remaining supplies and brave the grueling 10-day snow-laden trek across the mountains. Or choose to retreat and wait out for a clearing in the weather. Neither encourage optimism.
As you look across the lake, there's food places, there's a bunch of houses overlooking the lake.
Two people kayak nearby as we walk the shores of Donner Lake. It's a beautiful sight, with the mountains as their backdrop. But dark stories can tarnish even the most beautiful views. Almost immediately after arriving at the lake, George Donner injures his hand. And what starts as a simple cut rapidly develops into a debilitating infection. The Donners, used to Midwest weather patterns, believed that in waiting, the snow would clear once the weather passed. With their leader crippled, the choice was easy. They would play it safe and wait until George and the weather improved. They choose a site at Adler Creek Meadows, 6 miles from what is now called Donner Lake. Meanwhile, the remaining party stay at the lake and actually attempt a passing, but they are forced to retreat as the snow thickens behind them. Winter has arrived in the High Sierra. Another glorious Sierra day in which one seems to be dissolved and absorbed and sent pulsing onwards we know not where. Life seems neither long nor short, and we take no more heed to save time or make haste than do the trees and stars. This is true freedom, a good, practical sort of immortality. John Muir, my first summer in the Sierra. Surrounded by indifferent beauty, the Donner Party is now stuck for an unknowable amount of glorious Sierra days, furiously attempting to survive its unforgiving landscape. A few manage to find previously built cabins. Some build makeshift shelters, and still others, particularly the single male hired hands, are forced to brave the elements alone. And food is fast becoming a problem. Large animals leave the mountains to hibernate. The remaining few cattle that they have are starving, so provide little meat. And the only animals that remain are too small to shoot. The local tribe, known as the Northern Washoe, knew better than to camp in such inhospitable conditions. Their oral tradition tells of a group of starving settlers high in the mountains whom they once tried to help, but then kept their distance after witnessing the desperate and terrible measures the group would take to survive.
There is snow lining up the top of the mountains, but it's 50-something degrees. Where I'm at, there's no snow.
Where it's nice and beautiful for me to traverse the rocks of Donner Lake, my mind drifts towards the settlers' plight as I stare at the snow-lined mountains beyond the lake. They were having a hard time walking normally now, staggering as if drunk at times and needing to stop to rest every quarter of a mile or so. Daniel James Brown, The Indifferent Stars Above. Attempts are made to find help, but none are successful. The cold is too bitter and the snow too deep. The party is now forced to boil animal hides into a tasteless, pulp-like substance for sustenance. With a growing urgency, a group, now ominously referred to as the Forlorn Hope, decide to either cross the path or die in the attempt. In the end, 17 members leave the camp. Wearing poorly constructed snowshoes, the group sets up the mountain, leaving behind the long-suffering Donner Party in a final bid to find help. As they slowly ascend the rough terrain, the scene below remains grim. Tamsin Donner can only watch as her husband's condition worsens. The sickly Margaret Reed attempts to comfort her starving children. Meanwhile, across the mountain, James Reed, the banished murderer and businessman, attempts to raise money for a rescue party. The Forlorn Hope inches on. The clock is ticking. The climb is excruciating. The poorly constructed snowshoes become heavier with each labored step. The cold wind is relentless. What keeps the 17 members of the Forlorn Hope going is that they know if they do not succeed in finding help, the friends and family they left behind will likely die. Nights are brutal. They have no shelter, only increasingly damp blankets and the warmth of each other's bodies. Days are no better. Many go snowblind. Sweat surfacing in the effort of a hike increases chances for hypothermia. Despite this, they have reason for optimism. They expect to make it across within 10 days and carry with them enough provisions that it should be feasible. And they are right in their optimism because they could have been successful, if not for another fatal miscalculation. For if the group chose to climb a hill, which they elected not to out of exhaustion, they would have made it within the allotted 10 days. They, however, choose to go downwards into a deep, dark valley. Bones have their secrets, but they tell no lies. Daniel James Brown, The Indifferent Stars Above. The storm lasts 36 hours. Travel is impossible. They awake screaming, wrapped in frost-covered blankets. One by one, many freeze to death. Father died on Christmas night at 11 o'clock in the commencement of the snowstorm. Mary Ann Graves, a member of the Forlorn Hope. In a desperate bid for survival, the remaining settlers of the Forlorn Hope cannibalize the frozen dead. They remove the arms, head, and legs to make the act appear less gruesome and roast the remaining parts over a fire. Everyone averts their gaze as they cry in silence, lamenting the action they feel they must take to survive. Two hired Native American guides, Luis and Salvador, refuse to partake in the gruesome deed, watching the act from afar. In the following days, Luis and Salvador smartly leave the party, only to run into them a few days later. Some say the pair might have died from the cold, but many assume Luis and Salvador were murdered and cannibalized by the Forlorn Hope. On January 1st, feet bloody and frostbitten, carrying the dried remains of fellow settlers, the remaining seven members stumble down the west slope of the Sierras. One member forges blindly ahead and stumbles upon a house. Delusional and exhausted, he tells of the rest of his party and those still trapped on the other side of the Sierra Nevada. A rescue group is mustered from nearby Johnson's Ranch, who retrace the man's bloody footprints to find six other survivors lying in the mud. What was estimated to take 6 to 10 days for the Forlorn Hope took 33 days. News quickly spreads of the remaining Donner Party members still trapped beyond the mountains. Rescue parties are formed. What they find, waiting back across the mountains, haunts many for the remainder of their lives. I told the guides I would go too, for to go back and to hear the cries of hunger from my little brother and sisters was more than I could stand. I would go as far as I could, let the consequences be as they might. Marianne Graves, member of the Forlorn Hope. Some risk the trek back to Donner Lake because they have family trapped at the camp. This includes James Reed, who plays a key role in organizing rescue efforts. Others feel morally obligated to do so, and still others do it for money. Regardless of intent, all rescue parties witness the worst conditions possible upon arriving across the Sierra. Mutilated bodies of the dead. Children dazed with hunger. Unimaginable conditions. In total, four relief parties are sent over time. Because of injury, illness, or lack of supplies, it's impossible to remove everyone at once. The last survivor, Louise Kesenberg, who had supported himself during the last few weeks by cannibalizing the dead, does not leave the camp until April 21st. George Donner, whose infection never improved, dies and was likely cannibalized. Tamsin Donner, who refuses to leave her husband until his death, dies, her body never found. Margaret Reed, along with her children, are rescued by the first relief party. In what is perhaps the largest shelling of irony, the man most responsible for the unraveling atrocities makes it to California, his family intact. In the end, 48 of the original 87 survived the trek out west, with an estimated 22 of the dead cannibalized by the survivors. Death was the rule. Life, the exception. Life was at best a transitory dream, set in a universe that was entirely indifferent to his fate. Daniel James Brown, The Indifferent Stars Above. The harrowing saga of the Donner Party. Why continue to tell this story? Morbid as the details are, does it show humanity's willingness to embrace the cruel extremes of life? Or does it display our enduring spirit as humans? Is it a story of flaws or our greatest attributes? Greed or hope? Perhaps we continue to tell this story because it contains everything at once. Thank you, genuinely, for listening to Backroad Odyssey. If you find value in the stories that we tell, rate and subscribe wherever you're listening now. Genuinely, genuinely helps the show continue to do what we do and to grow. Things will get a lot more happy in the next couple episodes, but like I said in part one, to explore history, to explore locations is to explore both the good and the bad. Be good to each other. Where to next? Backroad Odyssey.